Scotland may have Nessie, the Loch Ness monster, but we have Champ, the legendary serpent-like monster of Lake Champlain. Yet much of the history of America's most famous lake monster remains untold. In his latest book, Robert Bartholomew embarks on a search to find the truth behind the mythical creature. In The Untold Story of Champ, Bartholomew explores both the lake itself and period sources and archives in an attempt to answer the ultimate question, does Champ exist? Although he finds the trail obscured by sloppy journalism, local leaders motivated by tourism income, and bickering monster hunters, he does weigh the evidence to craft The Untold Story of Champ, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Robert Bartholomew to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
So what does it take to get a New Yorker who's living in and teaching in New Zealand to investigate Champ?
Well, I grew up on Lake Champlain. We have a several hundred acre farm at the base of Lake Champlain, and I can remember my grandmother telling me stories from her grandmother about Champ, which was at the time called the serpent of Lake Champlain. And I've been fascinated all my life.
Give us a sense of how far this dates back, of the first sighting of Champ, because I was shocked in the book by indeed how far this does go back.
Yes, it goes back essentially into the early 1800s. The big flap was in 1873. There are dozens and dozens of sightings from the 1870s, 80s, and 90s combined. And what I found really interesting was, the more I looked into it, the more surprised I became. Because in the 1870s and 80s, the Champlain monster was the number one lake monster in the world, bar none. Loch Ness didn't come on the scene until about 1933. There had been some sightings at Loch Ness, but it didn't get a lot of media exposure. If you went across the United States in 1873 and asked about lake monsters, I mean, the Lake Champlain monster was a household name in the 1870s and 80s. Everybody knew the Lake Champlain monster.
When we see the fuzzy photographs, when we see the artist renderings of both Champ and the Loch Ness Monster, there are similarities, aren't there?
There are, and people have pointed out similarities between the famous 1934 Surgeon's photo and the famous Sandra Manzi photo. And interestingly enough, a few years ago, the Loch Ness Monster's Surgeon's photo, probably the most famous monster photo in the world at the time, was discredited. And it's interesting because when you talk about monster photos from lakes, the famous 1977 Sandra Manzi photo is often said by scientists and a lot of books and newspaper articles to be the number one lake monster photo in the world. But, you know, there's some strange things about that photo that have never been published before. And that's the thing about this book. The more you dig under the surface, the more just unusual things were coming out. Just very briefly, Sandra Manzi said she threw the negative away. And just imagine, you take a photo of what you believe to be a living dinosaur, and you throw away the negative. And the negative is the only thing that the is capable of verifying the photo because you can blow it up. It's certainly odd. But then later, as I dug into this, and no one was aware of this until the book came out, Mr. Manzi told a well-known scientist in Vermont that they didn't throw away the negative, that they either burned it or buried it in the backyard because it was like a frightful experience. Kind of like the Coke bottle in The Gods Must Be Crazy, the evil thing. It's very strange. You know, I've known a lot of people over the years who've taken many photos, but none of them burned or buried their negatives in the backyard. And the oddities continue, you know, about the photo. She was there for 5 minutes. She snapped just one photo, but there was more film on the roll. You know, if space aliens were to land on the lawn where you're broadcasting from and you grabbed your camera and they stayed there for several minutes, would you take just one photo? And then, you know, she claimed the New York Times offered her a substantial amount of money to publish the photo. The Times said in writing that that's not the case. And I believe the Times, because if it wasn't true, they'd be sued for defamation.
Right.
And so it just goes on and on, the oddities. And I'm not saying that Sandra Manzi is a hoaxer, but it's just very unusual. They can't find the location. The location's in a very small area. People have combed that area. And where they claim to have taken that photo looks like no area in that northern part of the lake between St. Albans and the Canadian border.
This was a photo taken in 1977, not ultimately released until 1981. And when it was released, obviously caused a global sensation. When you look, and that's one of the things that I don't understand about lake monsters, and perhaps you can help me with this, and that is the searching for that site, and then someone felt, well, okay, we found the site, and they decided to do some testing and go down and see what they could find. But we assume this creature moves, right?
That's right, and the creature that she described, quote-unquote creature, came directly up, stayed in sight for about 5 minutes, and then went right back down. And a number of scientists have suggested it was some type of tree trunk coming up and then coming back down again. And it's just very odd. You know, I had a friend go to Washington, D.C., met with an attorney who holds the original photograph. They open up the safe, take the photo out, and he looks at the photo, and he took a picture of it, and he gave it to me. It looks a little bit different than the photo that they release. It looks nicer, the photo they released, than that one. It's a bit yellow on the sides and stuff. One of the things Sandra Manzi said was that she stuck it to her bulletin board with a pen. Well, there's no pen hole in that photo that he looked at. And, you know, there's something else that most people don't know. Whenever the Manzi photo is published, a small army of people have their fingers in the pie, including lawyers. There's Sandra Manzi's workmate, Roy Kapler, who took Manzi to court in the 1980s over the photo because she had signed a paper that he was going to be her business manager to promote the photo. So he gets a cut every time the photo is published. She gets a cut. His lawyer gets a cut. Manzi gets a cut. Manzi's lawyer gets a cut. Her ex-husband gets a cut. And to me, it's a bit of a feeding frenzy. What I say in the book, Champ has a 401k plan.
Was she a resident of the lake?
No, but she had grown up in that region in Vermont as a child, and then she went back there again. And some people say, well, you know, it's a massive lake. There's several hundred miles of shoreline. It's like finding a needle in the haystack. But it's not, because they said they took the picture between St. Albans and the Canadian border. And that's a very small area. And you can walk up there literally in the wintertime and try to locate where that photo was taken. But it just doesn't look like any place there along the lake. So I can't say that it's a hoax, but it's very, very unusual that you take a photo like that and then you can't remember where you took it in an area where you did grow up in.
It does seem, and I have a summer camp on a local lake, on a lake not nearly the size of Champlain, but, you know, neighbors across the lake who have, you know, like a distant nephew who comes and stays the night and has one too many. I mean, everybody on the lake is talking about it. It's a small community. So my question is, it would seem to me for the people that live there day to day, how do they embrace this story and this history and this notion?
Most people look at Champ as an affectionate local regional icon. You know, Champ is a positive symbol. It's the mascot of a baseball team up there in Burlington. And it's just a symbol of beauty, a symbol of mystery. And to a certain extent, you know, if somebody said, would you wager a bet as to whether Champ exists? And if I had $100 to bet, I would probably bet 10 that Champ existed, and I put the rest of the money in my pocket because you want that mystery. There's something nice about having that mystery. And if you were to drain the lake, pull the plug, and you found out that Champ was there, Champ wasn't there, it kind of takes away that mystery.
I mean, this is something that if you go to Port Henry, there is a sign, a Champ sightings in this whole in this particular bay area where these sightings have occurred, and name after name after name are on the signs. So, I mean, there's that, obviously, the impact and many people that have the same story, but also what this means for the lake, what it means for the area, what it means for tourism. And I assume that plays very much into the story and the importance that it, quote unquote, stay alive.
Champ is an environmental symbol because it's a barometer of the health of the lake and our environment. And so every time you have a Champ sighting, it's like, well, you know, the lake is healthy enough to support Champ, you know, in theory. To me, you know, there's two aspects of the book. The first aspect is the early history that hasn't been reported before and all those early sightings. And I think that's important that people, local residents, regional residents, be aware of that early history. The second part of the book deals with the kind of seedy side of Champ and the human element, so to speak. I think when people read the book, you know, it'll raise some eyebrows, it'll ruffle some feathers, and it may see my name crossed off some Christmas card lists, but it needed to be written because so many people have muddied the waters, so to speak, by making dubious claims and conducting questionable research on Champ to the point where most people don't really know what to believe on Champ because there are so many conflicting claims. So the untold story of Champ was written to set the record straight. What's fact? What's fiction? And what's speculation? And the reality is, I mean, Champ may exist. There are some really compelling sightings, especially from the 1800s. But to me, the more important story is what doesn't deal with whether Champ is real or not, and that's that human element, that social history. That's to me the part that people need to be aware of. You know, in 1970, historian Marjorie Porter from upstate New York, she wrote an article in Vermont Life magazine that said in 1609, Samuel D. Champlain wrote in his ship's log that he saw this snake-like creature 20 feet long with a head like a horse. And this story has been repeated in books, on TV documentaries, and magazine articles for years and years. I have checked the original source, the original log. It's not there. He did not see Champ. What he described seeing was a big fish, and it's a textbook description of a gar pike. There's even a sketch of it. It looks just like a gar pike. But here's what's interesting. Before 1970, in the Vermont Life article, there were zero sightings of Champ with a horse-like head. Not a single report. After the article appeared in 1970, everybody was seeing Champ with a horse-shaped head. You know, it's a form of mass psychology. But you mentioned the tourism in the village of Port Henry. It's very clear now that Samuel D. Champlain did not see Champ. But people in the Port Henry area know this. It's been reported up there. So why does the village of Port Henry continue to have on their giant sightings board Samuel D. Champlain as the first person to see Champ? And why do newspaper reporters in that area still write articles promoting this when they know it's not true? For me, it's an attempt to create Champ Incorporated, the selling of a monster to draw in tourists. You know, but why let the facts get in the way of a good story?
Well, exactly. And Robert, you know, who are we in the sense of, you know, are you going to take away Santa Claus too? I mean, does it matter ultimately?
I think we can look at Champ in the sightings, and it's fascinating to look at that. But it's also important to set the record straight. There is a researcher, Elizabeth von Muggenthaler, who I call the Champ Whisperer. And starting in 2003, She claimed to have detected these underwater sounds of a large champ-like creature, supposedly using biosonar to get around. The Discovery Channel has made a big deal out of her findings. I have interviewed several of the world's top experts on marine biosonar. Not one of them take her research seriously. And for me, you know, it's important to have some aspect of the story true. And let's say that that's not true, and the evidence would suggest it's not true. CHAMP can still be out there, but it's important to get the story right. And the same thing, I mean, there's a researcher, Dennis J. Hall, for about 15 years, he operated this group called CHAMP Quest. And during the 1990s and early 2000s, he was on countless TV shows and quoted in numerous newspaper articles as the public face of CHAMP. He claims to have had 23 sightings, that as a child he held a baby CHAMP in his arms. And for me, it reminds me of that housewife in New Mexico a few years ago who burned a tortilla and thought she saw the face of Jesus. You know, he's seeing CHAMP everywhere. And for me, these researchers who don't have a lot of credibility behind them, again, they muddy the waters. People can look at them and say, oh, I don't believe that. But it doesn't mean CHAMP isn't out there.
So, okay, let's say CHAMP is out there. What the hell is it?
Well, most books claim that CHAMP is a dinosaur, either a zeuglodon, a form of primitive whale, or a plesiosaur, which you find in Loch Ness. But that's not really possible because they're animals, and they have to come up for air. And you'd be seeing a lot more sightings than you are now. And how do they breathe in the wintertime? I mean, they hold their breath the entire winter. Then people say, well, you know, CHAMP adapted to become an air breather. But not in the mere 10,000 years that Lake Champlain has been around. You know, you can speculate all you want. You could say, you know, what if George Washington had an electric blender at Valley Forge? You know, how would that have, would we have won the war faster? There's all kinds of speculations out there about CHAMP. But you have to look at, there has to be a breeding population of between 30 and 40 creatures. Most experts would agree to that. Where are all those sightings of this creature that needs to come up for air? Where is the carcass? I want to believe, and it's still possible CHAMP might be there, but as a scientist, I also have to ask some tough questions. And, you know, if someone is claiming to hear CHAMP under the water, or someone is claiming to have 23 sightings, well, I'm not saying these people are hoaxing, but you can get carried away, and eyewitness testimony is quite unreliable and subject to error. As we know, we've put a number of people in prison, and some people have been executed based on eyewitness testimony, and then DNA evidence comes up and frees them. I'm still waiting for the DNA evidence. You know, the other oddity around the lake is that there have been several reports since 1873 of boats being slammed into by a giant creature under the lake.
Right.
And a number of people have suggested that this is CHAMP. But a lot of people don't realize there is a prehistoric creature in the lake. It's called a sturgeon, and they can grow to be many feet long and several hundred pounds. And for some odd reason, all around the world, sturgeon ram into boats. No one is exactly sure why, but they do. And there was a fantastic sighting, an excellent sighting of the Champlain Monster in the 1930s. And someone had a gun on their boat, pulled it out, and shot it. And then the creature submerged. A few days later in that same area, someone found a large sturgeon. You know, they have very bony backs, and they can, you know, it's water is notoriously unreliable when you look across. I mean, it might look like 300 yards, and you start swimming, and it turns out to be 2 miles.
Right.
You know, the human mind does not take in information like a video cassette recorder. The human mind interprets information as it takes it in. You know, where all you have to do is watch an NFL football game, and they keep showing the instant replay because the referees, who are trained observers, who practice all the time and who have excellent eyesight, are constantly making mistakes. And so we're very fallible, and we're very open to misperceiving things. I don't think most people are hoaxing. And again, Champ could be out there. I mean, there are some compelling sightings from the 1800s and even today. But as a scientist, I need the fossils, I need the body, I need the bones.
Well, I understand that. The thing I find interesting in hearing your story, though, is that you seem like you're fighting against the world here. And it would seem to me that deep down, most people believe you.
Yeah, I want to set the record straight because there's been so much shonky journalism, as I say, in the history of Champ. It's a study in journalism, really. It's amazing how so many things about Champ have been written that clearly aren't true, that have been passed on because no one went back to check the original research, and then it gets reported as reality again and just handed down again over and over again as if it were true when it wasn't. So my job was to go back and look at the original logs of Samuel D. Champlain, the early reports and how they have been misrepresented over time. So to me, it really is a book that could be used in journalism classes and how it's important to go to your original sources and use those original sources.
Well, the name of the book is The Untold Story of Champ, A Social History of America's Loch Ness Monster. It's published by Excelsior Editions. Robert Bartholomew, thank you very much for sharing the story with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Untold Story of Champ, A Social History of America's Loch Ness Monster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.